This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Football Odyssey. I'm yours truly, Aaron Harris, and today will be a special presentation featuring Chris Willis of NFL Films, Greg James of CFL America, and myself, discussing our favorite NFL Films productions featuring the voice of God, John Facenda, who from the late 60s to the early 80s used his thunderous voice to narrate the beauty, violence, and passion of pro football. Given Facenda's vast body of work, this list is certainly not absolute, and I encourage all of you to let us know what you think of our list, and let us know what your favorite Facenda narrations are by reaching out to us on Twitter and Instagram. I've also compiled a YouTube playlist of the films mentioned in this episode that you can access in the description. As always, feel free to subscribe and share. And without further ado, here is the best of John Facenda. So, Greg, you're joining me for the second time, so thanks for joining us again. Chris, this is the first time that you and I are meeting, and I know you've done plenty of sports history podcasts over the years, but for those who may not know you or know your story, can you first explain what you do at NFL Films and kind of talk about how you came into working for the company?
Yeah, it was back in 1995, which is 27 years ago now. I did an internship through a graduate school at Ohio State for sports history. And that sort of evolved into being offered a job full time at NFL Films running their research library. So for the last 26 seasons, I've been in charge of the research library, sort of getting all the material for our producers, whether it's on tape or film, or whether it's a print material for all their projects. So anything research based that they need, I provide that, in the library. And so it's been a pretty good journey so far, and then hopefully, keep it going.
Yeah. You got to feel like the kid in a candy shop now.
Sure. Yeah. And the best thing is, just like any fan or, historic, like each year is different, like it's not the same, we might do some similar same shows or, a series, that goes on, but everything's different. The season's different, the players, the coaches, they own it, like it's all, experience each year, it's always pretty, exciting. And very fortunate to be a part of it.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like it's a great job, and to be able to be with an organization that has a lot of history and has, a lot of archives to tell the story of one of the biggest institutions in America, that has to be a real big privilege too.
Sure. Like I said, it's different every year, and it's nice to, and like I said, we'll be talking about films, talk about Facenda, that's in our warehouse. And that's a big part of our history of how people love not just the NFL, but they love NFL Films and what we provide and present, each year.
Yeah, this episode is going to be titled The Best of John Facenda, but that's kind of with an asterisk or a quotation, because obviously Facenda did hundreds of these, so it's going to be impossible to narrow them all down. I mean, personally, for my list, I don't have any season highlights for particular teams or particular games. It's more abstract and theme based. But I know both of you guys grew up with John Facenda and NFL Films, and it's got to be crazy to see how the NFL as a marketing mechanism utilized NFL Films to kind of build the mythology. So before we kind of go into our individual top five, Greg, do you kind of want to talk a little bit about NFL Films growing up for you and kind of what it meant and how that sort of molded your opinion of the league?
Well, back in the 70s, for, Chris, and back me up on this, back in the 70s, we didn't have ESPN. We didn't have 24-hour, NFL Network. So, living in Chicago, there was really only one way to see what was going on elsewhere. And that was, this weekend, Chris, help me out here. Maybe it's age catching up with me. But when Pat Summerall, the show that he did, what was it? It was This Week in the NFL?
NFL Action.
It started out, it had a few different titles, NFL Action, This Week in Pro Football.
This Week, yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's, that show sort of evolved into what we call Week in Review, which then,
right.
then became on HBO and Inside the NFL. And that's been going on for, you know, almost four decades. So,
yeah. And, you know, I mean, for us growing up in the 70s, I mean, that was how we saw our highlights. Plus NFL films, they were the ones that brought the highlights to Howard Cosell. So Monday Night Football halftime highlights, you know, that was all NFL films. And with the magic of Howard, I mean, we're not going to talk about Howard tonight, but, you know, that's another great voice in the NFL that very few people, you know, that I know Chris and I finally remember. But those were, and that was NFL films. That's how we saw the highlights, you know, back then. So my love, you know, for the NFL, you know, started back with John Facenda, seeing those specials that would come on the high end UHF stations that were, and back then the NFL film syndicated a lot of those shows. So that's where, you know, that's kind of where it all took root.
Yeah, I don't recall the first time that I remember hearing him, but I think whenever I first got NFL Network, I was in high school and my parents got it as part of their cable package. I remember seeing NFL Follies, which was kind of like my introduction to NFL films and how they kind of cut up these highlights in ways that were very thematic and had a narrative to it. And then as you get deeper, you find, and YouTube has been a big part of this, but especially back in, you know, the early 2000s and the mid 2000s when NFL Network would show a lot of those vintage NFL films, it kind of crafted that mythology in my head and really got me into history in and of itself. So we have our individual top five that we're going to get into, excuse me. And one that was on all of our lists was the Championship Chase from 1974.
Winds whisper of high hopes. Victory is in the skies. A season awaits with glory in her eyes. One joins with many on summer's green field. Time to strive, to dare, for all not to yield. Right from the opening kickoff, the Championship Chase of 1974 took on added dimensions. A new rule moved the kickoff back 5 yards, and more kicks were returned for more touchdowns than ever before. On punts, another new rule permitted only two defenders to head downfield before the ball is kicked. With more time to size up the coverage, nimble return specialists like Cincinnati's Lamar Parrish made the punt return a game-breaking offensive weapon.
Yeah, I mean, I think if, you know, whether you grew up, you know, with it, you know, in the 70s or 80s or now, you know, Championship Chase 1974, it's probably on a lot of people's top fives. You know, it's just a classic, and it's just a I think it's probably the perfect combination of John Facenda's narration based on Steve Sable's writing. You know, I mean, there's just, I mean, I would think that there's two or three great lines and sentences and the autumn wind, the Raiders, you know, sort of autumn wind part of it wouldn't even be in my top two or three. You know, it's like, you know, everybody associates, you know, that with, you know, the 74 Championship Chase is that Raider theme. The autumn wind is a pirate, you know, so, but I'll try to recite one of my favorite lines, and it's over a shot of rain coming down, and you see Joe Namath, you know, in his Jets uniform, and says, and it goes, "Do you fear the force of the wind, the slash of the rain? Go face them and fight them, be savage again. The palms of your hands will thicken, the skin of your teeth will tan. You'll go ragged and weary and wet, but you must do the best you can." You know, I mean, that's, you know, it just, when you see the visuals, you know, and then you hear, and that Steve's writing, and like I said, it doesn't get any better than that.
What about you, Greg?
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I'm right there with Chris. And the one thing about the Championship Chase that I love, and again, it boils down, and Chris, you hit the nail on the head. Steve's writing doesn't get enough credit for making John Facenda as great as he was. And when I hear that, and I listened to it again today while I was at work, I got chills just, you know, and I've heard it hundreds of times, but every time I hear John Facenda's voice in that, again, that and talking about, you know, the line that Chris gave, you know, I want to go strap on my cleats again. And you hear that and it's like, yeah, I'm ready to go. But the beautiful thing about the championship chase is if somebody were, you know, outside of the United States, say from, and they were to ask you, why is football America's game? What makes it so special? I think that would be one of the, if you had to show them something, that would be something you would show them to not only to show the gallant, you know, the pageantry of it, but also the poetry of it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's why it's, you know, I think on all of our lists is because it combines all the elements, both visual, visually, auditorial. I'm tripping over my words here, but it pleases the ear, I guess, is where I'm going with. And also too with the music too, it all combines. It's very, in many ways, I think it's almost, at least to me, almost the perfect football documentary.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash with a silver hat about his head and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
You go from having these highlights where they give you the rundown of a season or a particular game or team, but then you go into these poetic audio-visual narrations, right? Like you have the autumn wind, you have the Mac Heron, the little halfback that could. You have, you know, sort of these alternate back and forth styles that I think really works in its favor. And I think that kind of gives this particular one a little bit of a bigger scope, maybe as opposed to some of the other year by year breakdowns.
Yeah, and the best part about, I mean, like Creve and Chris said, I think the autumn wind is not, it's a very small part of, you know, it's one act in many acts of a season. And of course that's the most memorable when you hear that the Raiders, when you hear that tune, you're like, it's almost like, you know, there's a great movie on, you know, you're flipping through and there's always that remote drop. That's the remote drop right there.
Now you guys had another one that was on your list that you both agreed on, right? A Glorious Game.
The sport is more than spectacle. It is the game for all seasons. From the strength-sapping heat of early summer, through a winter's night chill, pro football is played. It is our new national pastime, a glorious game. A sea of people make every Sunday a sellout. Pro football is a mirror of early America, reflecting toughness, courage, and self-denial. It is not a game of statistics, but of men who collectively and individually determine victory or defeat.
Chris, why is this one in your top five?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of, you know, it was done in 1971, so it's a little bit earlier than 74 and stuff, but it's another one, although this one was written by Bob Ryan, who, if you know a little bit about him, he's the one that came up with America's Team, you know, for Dallas Cowboys. So he was a young producer, and it was sort of along those same lines. It's a really good documentary that just shows what the, you know, what NFL, what professional football is about. And it sort of glorifies, you know, like I said, and we're, you know, we're in the business of glorifying it and making it positive. And the glorious game to me, checks off all those boxes, you know, similar to Championship Chase as an earlier version of some of the documentaries that we did. And like I said, I'm always impressed when I watch it just because, you know, like I said, it's just in general terms and just sort of just like I said, it gets you, you know, goosebumps, and it just does a lot to me emotionally. Like, oh, you know what? This is why I love watching football, especially the NFL, especially pro football. You know, like I said, it's one of those sort of, like I said, rare films, you know, from a young producer, like Bob was very young at the time, you know, 1971, you know, so, you know, probably late 20s when he did it, you know, so that's why I sort of, you know, my top five, like, okay, that one's up there for those reasons.
Yeah. Bob was one of the first employees at the company, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I'll read it. Like his opening, one of his opening lines, it's one that we've used in different formats too. You know, he says, "The game comes alive, pro football, the game for the ear and the eyes, a 2.5 hour carnival of color, sound and action." You know, like we've used that over the years, just like Autumn Wind, you're writing some Raiders stuff. Like we used Autumn Wind and HBO Hard Knocks Raiders just a couple years ago, you know, like 30 years old, and we're still using that writing and that. And this is another one. I know we used it for our This Is the NFL segment, you know, which is Presents now, which is, you know, the magazine show that we've done for 30 years. We use that in the open, you know, the sort of game comes alive, 2.5 hour carnival. Like those lines that were written 30, 40 years ago still resonates, and it still, like I said, it still gets you pumped up.
Is this the one that has the line about being a Sunday's cathedral in it too?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, that one always stuck out to me too. What were we gonna say, Greg?
I was gonna say it's timeless, and it evokes. It was done in 71, so it reflects kind of a time, an era, which, you know, I vaguely remember as a kid, and I can't even explain it, but when I hear that, I feel I kind of remember what it was like being a little kid again and actually seeing the game for a first time. So it brings out a reaction in me that, you know, early memories of just Autumn and you know, seeing, you know, the leaves and, you know, football going along with that later. But as to what Chris was saying, it's timeless. I mean, look, I mean, we're what, almost 50 years, over 50 years now. And the words and the music are still from that time are still being used.
Boy, and plus 1971 too, I think it's also, we're a year after the AFL and the NFL have been merged for a year now. So I think when people look at a glorious game, I think there's like a lot of history that goes into that, because 60s or after the 58 championship game, when television really had kind of sucked everyone into pro football, I think people had really, or the country as a whole had gone all in on professional football. So I think the term a glorious game is a pretty good accurate representation of what people really felt about football at that time too.
Yeah, the other thing, I don't want to sell him short. Sorry, Greg, but you know, we're talking about Steve writing and Bob's writing, which, like I'm glad we're bringing up guys who, you know, like I said, you know, doesn't get maybe as credit as much, because, you know, if you're younger, if you're 25 years old, you're not going to know who Bob Ryan or even Steve Sable is, maybe. But those guys, like I said, and I don't want to sell Facenda short. It's Facenda, right, that delivers those lines. You know, like when I hear, you know, the game comes alive, pro football for the game, like I it's only Facenda that I hear, you know, and, right, and I think with championship, Championship Chase the same, but like you only want to hear Facenda, you know, there might, right, be some great other voices. We talked about Howard Cosell, or if you mentioned, you know, Chris Berman, Pat Summerall, but like I could only hear Facenda, like I said, so I don't want to sell the short, like, hey, this is why, yeah, it's so special.
Well, it's because, you know. Yeah, it's much like somebody who writes great music. You only know, but when it comes to the voice in your head singing that music, there's only one, and it's Facenda.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. But it really is great for Steve in some ways. I kind of wonder what his poetry would be like if he did write poetry that wasn't football related. I mean, obviously it's a sport that invoked a lot of passion in him, but yeah, it's certainly great when you watch that video clip of him and John Facenda side by side in the sound booth talking about, you know, how to pronounce this word or, you know, how to say certain vocals at what levels. I mean, you definitely see it was definitely a team effort. You know, I'm Vicenda, like you said, Chris, is going to be the one that stands out because he is, you know, quote unquote, the voice of God. But yeah, the words that Steve put together and Bob Ryan and whoever was producing were flawless on a routinely basis, too. So my number four is where I kind of deviated a little bit, and I went with Try and Catch the Wind from 1969.
For his job is not to collide and bruise and howl and punish. But rather his job is to streak beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free. Silhouetted by the stands to make the circus catch. It's his job and his glory to rise on the voice of the cheering throng. For this man is the receiver. A man whose labor it is to try and catch the wind.
And this was by David Morcom, who I don't think I know too much about compared to some of the other producers at the time. But this one was interesting because this kind of felt like an NFL film's homage to Dr. Seuss. It has a little bit of this inspiration behind it, telling the little kid who's always watching the NFL wide receiver dream big and go and catch the wind, like to the young kids who want to grow up being NFL wide receivers. And it's got some great footage. I mean, there's great Fred Biletnikoff highlights and Charlie Taylor, rest in peace. And there's also, he has this one great line when he's talking about, and when the earth booming monsters, when the earth booming monster groaning struggle of the lion is about to begin, when the havoc wreakers settle with a thud, this man scampers to an isolated position on the edge of violence. So it kind of paints a good way about how in a physical game, a receiver is going to have his physical responsibilities too, but his job is to go out and make the quarterback look good. So that was one that always I thought had that always resonated with me and always had like not a made for kids feel, but it definitely kind of felt like one that had a good message and a story behind it.
And it brings out the wonder in the game, too.
Yeah, certainly. Does this one do you remember this one, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big receiver guy. You know, I like, you know, some of the things we've done with, you know, like Gift of Grab, and then was another one we did on receiver and stuff. So this one is another one of those early ones. I mean, I think it's not quite as popular just because, you know, I mean, we're talking about things that are 50 years old now, 51, 52 years old. And
sure.
And I don't think, you know, the majority of even fans that you enjoy watching NFL films are familiar with maybe a Glorious Game or Try and Catch the Wind, or I think you had another one, The Defenders, on your list, which is another one that's, you know, one of those early ones. And it's just amazing. Like I said, you said David Morcom, like, you know, he was, you know, producer for a while in those early years, and they sort of had free realm. You know, they didn't have as much input, you know, maybe from, you know, especially not from teams, you know, so they were able to take chances and, you know, like even the first Follies films and stuff like, so they were able to take some chances that maybe was a little different or even maybe off the beaten path of what sports documentaries, you know, the late 60s and early 70s. So it's a unique one to talk about.
Yeah, it definitely is a lot more experimental, and it kind of, like you said, I guess it doesn't really fit into a certain theme or a certain year, like highlight or anything like that. It's just a little bit abstract, but yeah, I think it does allow a lot of those early filmmakers to express some originality too. Mm-hmm. So Chris, stick with you. I think this is the point where we all have different selections. Where did you go for your number three?
I guess number three was the one film that I wasn't quite as familiar when I was growing up, you know, but once I started watching it, you know, when I started at films, is one I really like is one, you know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. So obviously, you know, cradle pro football in Ohio. So, you know, sort of grew up a fan, and I loved going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, it's one of my favorite spots to go to, you know, 2 hours from Columbus. And so in 1977, they did a film, NFL film, did a documentary called Their Deeds and Dogged Faith. And it's a unique title. You're like, well, what does that really mean? And what it really came out is when the Pro Football Hall of Fame elected its first class, their first director was a guy named Dick McCann, who had worked for the Washington Football Club. And when they announced the 17 charter members, he used that quote. He said, oh, their deeds and dog of faith will live forever, you know, here at the Hall of Fame. So in 1977, they did a film that had stories of a few of the guys that were just elected to the Hall of Fame, you know, especially Gale Sayers and Y.E. Tittle. I think Frank Kiffert was in that class. And so it was a very interesting film because it had a really Canton Hall of Fame, you know, greatness type of feel to it, like Their Deeds and Dog of Faith. So that's why I picked that one. And Fassenda is just, you know, just like I said, he just knocks it out of the park of a little bit different because, like I said, I'm a big fan of the Hall of Fame and the greatness that, you know, that you know, gets elected to that building. So, and especially, you know, I mean, anytime you watch Gale Sayers highlights, you know, and I picked that kind of quote because I'll say the sort of, it says, it cannot be expressed in words. It cannot be confined to the Hall of Fame. The legacy of Gale Sayers belongs to the millions who saw him play, who remember his moves like fragment of a beautiful dream, moves who no coach can teach and no words can ever describe. And that's another Steve paragraph, you know. And but the way Fassenda delivers, like I said, just imagine it slowed down, a little more dramatic, a little bit more Fassenda just telling you what he thinks of Gale Sayers, you know. So that film, like I said, just because, like I said, you know, I'll be redundant, like the, being a big fan of the Hall and the greatness that gets in there and the history that you know, represents. So that film kind of stood out a little bit more than maybe some of the others.
Now, you said you didn't see this one whenever you were young.
No, it came out in 77. So I was 7, 8 years old, you know, so I don't recall, but then when I started working, you know, like I said, I was like, wow, what is this film? You know, cause I don't think it's not like Championship Chase where you kind of hear things over and over and use it. You might see it on NFL Network, like, or even A Glorious Game or those type of films, you know, or like Best Ever Quarterbacks, like those you grew up with the VHS tapes. I didn't get the VHS of Their Deeds and Dogged Faith, you know, but, you know, right. History of Pro Football, I think, is on the list here, you know, or Best Ever Quarterback, like those you kind of were a little bit more familiar where I wasn't quite as familiar with, but I enjoyed it very much when I saw it.
Were you looking for something like a project to do on the Hall of Fame and you found this, or was it just kind of one of those things?
No, it was one of those ones where, when I first started the first couple of years, we didn't have everything on tape. You know, there were still shows that were still just on film, you know, so we were going back trying to figure out, well, what were some of the ones that we can, you know, that we might be able to transfer. And a lot of it came out of, I mean, you guys are probably familiar with the Lost Treasure series, you know, yeah. Which was like 99, 2000, 2001. Like we were going back and saying, oh wow, here's a couple films from the like 6 or 7 that we didn't even have on tape, you know, so, right. You know, so unless you were Steve Sable and Bob Ryan and, you know, and Bob Smith, some of the old guard who'd been there for 30 years, you know, you knew of the film, they just hadn't been, but, you know, some of the younger producers didn't have access to this unless they, you know, tried to find the film and actually looked at it on a flatbed. So this was one of those that fell in that category, like, hey, what's this title? What's this one? And so that's how it turned out that became more familiar with that title.
So is it in one of the Lost Treasures episodes?
I don't believe so, because most of what was shot, like the Gale Sayers interview, the Y.E. Tittle stuff, had already been shown in the film. So I don't think that what we'd call the outs, a lot of Lost Treasures was stuff that hadn't been aired. So this show had aired and had a lot of the material, you know, it's the Gale Sayers where he's wearing the white bow tie and stuff. So you've seen that in some Hallis stuff and some Sayers stuff. So a lot of it had already been used. So gotcha. For this show.
Yeah. I got to find that one day then.
Yeah.
Like, what about you? What's on your number three?
Number three here. Let me pull this up here. And I apologize. Didn't have it at the ready. Well, I know my number one. Let me, if I go back to my number one, we'll talk, because I was thinking about my number one as Chris was talking, in the same vein, the history of pro football. He mentioned it. Okay. To me, that one, when I was trying to think to kind of come up, you know, why I love it so much, is because all of us have had a professor or two that we just love going to hear them talk. And to me, the whole episode is like sitting in an awesome lecture, just completely mesmerized by the words the professor is saying and just soaking it all in, going, this can be a good, you know, type of class that you will wake up. If it's an 8 o'clock class, you'll wake up for and make your way across campus, even though you've been out partying the night before, that type of class. And so when I hear that one, it's part of the reason why I think I love football history so much is that the way he presents it, and John Facenda, I mean, back before he, you know, while he was in NFL Films, I mean, he was a newscaster in Philadelphia, and back kind of that old guard, every city had him. We had him here in Chicago, of voices that you knew that you could trust, kind of like he was Philadelphia. And Chris, and I know you're not originally from Philadelphia, but you live there now, but everybody described him as Philadelphia's Walter Cronkite. And so to me, when I hear that, I'm like, oh, it just kind of all fits. You know, here is the professor giving the lecture, of pro football. And it kind of makes you want to, you know, come back for more, which obviously we all of us, you know, do in listening to John Facenda. We got to hear more of what he has to say.
This was one of the first full length documentary features that NFL Films did. Is that right?
Chris, I don't know.
Well, I think it was.
It was,
I think, a little more detail. I believe it was more 90 minutes than like maybe an hour. Yeah, I think it was a tad longer. I don't think it was quite 2 hours. I think it was more in the 90 minute range, if I'm correct. So, I think there was a little bit more. Most of the things up to maybe the late or the early 80s or late 70s was more in the half hour to 1 hour,
right?
Sort of. I think Big Game America might have been a tad longer, the original one with Burt Lancaster, but Burt Lancaster narrated that one. So, so it might have been a tad longer than the normal films documentary at that time.
Yeah. And even like the opening shot of that, the history of pro football, when you see the cold turfs and kicking the ball, and it's like, yeah, this is going to, you know, strap yourself in. I mean, I even think it's the type of documentary that, you know, my mother would actually sit down and watch. I think it would capture her imagination for the 90 minutes. So, and hey, my third one, we already talked about, A Glorious Game. So that, so I'm glad we get a chance to talk about the history of pro football. Sorry about that.
Well, and that's also one that makes me kind of wonder. I wish I could hear John Facenda narrate what the game was like back in the 1920s or even before, like during the days of the forward pass, right? Because you did. I think everyone has seen the footage whenever they had like the flying V.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's someone who just like basically lowers their shoulder into the apex. But yeah, to kind of hear like what he would think about like the ragtag and also like kind of blood sport game would be kind of cool based off that documentary. I'd be interested to see what he had to say, like, or actually what Steve could write for him, basically how they would sell that.
Defense first. If you don't have a good defense, you're not going to win that much. We think that to be a champion, you have to have a good defense.
Be it George Allen's Redskins or any of the 28 teams throughout the National Football League, game day is D-Day. If your opponent can't score, you will not be beaten. Their theory is simple. Their method somewhat more complex. These are the Wreckers. The Rebels. These are the Defenders.
All right. For me, I went with the Defenders. This one was from 1976, and it's a little interesting because this is one to me that, and a lot of these early abstract videos, they talk a lot about individual positions, but this is also one that talks a lot about scheme too. I mean, they go heavy talking about with Tom Landry in the 4-3 defense. He talks a lot about the blitz. He also talks a lot about the difference between being, you know, responsibilities for defensive tackles versus defensive ends and inside backers and outside backers. They got a lot of great footage. And he has a lot of great lines. I mean, there were three that stuck out to me. When he said, suddenly all defensive concepts became obsolete, passed by like Conestoga wagons on a modern interstate highway, which is something that I feel like only Steve could come up with. Then he had, when he was talking about the middle linebackers, he said, these are pro football's earth shakers, men who thunder and rumble, give one the impression of watching a good middle linebacker is like watching a natural catastrophe in progress. And I like how whenever he has that, he has Jack Lambert in one of the Super Bowls. And the last one he said was one NFL runner put it best when he said, anyone who says it doesn't hurt to be hit by men this size has either been hit, either has never been hit, or has been hit so hard he doesn't remember. But this was an interesting one where they kind of discuss one dimension of the team, because, you know, sometimes you hear people say that, you know, football is one team, but it's also one team of two different teams. And to show some love just purely on the defensive side of the ball, especially at a time when defense was really preferable and popular, was interesting to look at.
Yeah, and like it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, John Facenda being the professor. That's a great example of, you know, let's just say, I mean, you know, being locked in, hearing him, you know, even though he's reading a script and he's reading his line, he is giving a lecture. And I remember when I first saw that, and, you know, as a kid, hey, I understood the game a little bit better because of the impact of the way he presented it. And obviously the visuals and, you know, with the music and everything. But, you know, when you're a young kid, I mean, hell, I mean, you know, not a young kid now, but when I hear those words and I hear that voice, yeah, I can go back to that point in time as a kid going, I remember the first time I heard it and the impressions it left on me. And it still gives me chills hearing those words.
Yeah, well, this one is like a lot more descriptive, I think, than some of the other ones, because like it really goes deep into formations and plays. And there was also like another one that I don't, Facenda didn't have anything to do with it, but it was Lombardi teaching offense. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's like kind of like a little bit of a masterclass from that era of talking about like particulars and the nuances that whenever they have like the arrows pointing down to show you like what each responsibility is. So I thought that was interesting. Okay, Chris, what's next on your list?
I think I added this last as was one from 1983. It was a whole show on George Halas. He had just passed away, and we did a show like Pro Magazine, Weekly Magazine, which now is NFL Films Presents, that Steve hosted for, you know, decades. And it had a sort of Facenda. It was one of Facenda's last things he did. 83, the fall of 83 was his last full season. And then he did the Super Bowl 18 film in 1984. And to still hear his voice, you know, sort of, you know, for one of the founders of the NFL and George Halas and what he meant to the NFL. And, you know, you could even, you know, like I said, it made me sad, you know, like I said, as much as I, you know, he not only makes me feel goosebumps and wants me, you know, ready to play and, you know, just get excited, but then he also makes me want to feel sad. And, you know, like I said, so that show sort of stood out a little bit of, you know, here's one of the founders of the sport and, you know, his legacy and sort of Facenda's voice sort of putting a you know, sort of cap on his life. So that's why I picked that one.
Yeah. It's kind of like two legends going out at the same time in a way.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. Cause I forgot, you know, Halas was in 80, left in 83 and so did Facenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next September is Facenda's.
Oh
September,
yeah. That's 84. Right.
But
that's
yeah, because right. He did do the Raiders Redskins Super Bowl film. That was his last film that he did. So yeah, that's why that one stood out.
Is there at NFL Films anything commemorating John Facenda?
we don't have like a room or like a conference room or now if you on our video side there is like the hallway that leads into all our narration booths and some of our audio booths. There's photos of each of our narrators and Facenda's photos obviously prominent in that. So along with like Harry Callis and Jeff Kay and some of the other ones that have come around that same time. So so that's what we have in the building.
Now, Harry Callis did come in around the same time Facenda was there, right?
Yeah, probably just a tad after, you know, I mean, because Facenda started, like 67, not to steal your thunder, Aaron, but like, I think you have that call pro football coming up. That was like 67. Yeah, that was like 67. So Harry would have come a little bit later after that, you know. I mean, Summerall and Brookshire were there in the early 70s and mid 70s. And then Harry kind of, as he was becoming more well known with baseball and the bracket, he sort of came in then. So, sort of after that sort of initial surge of Facenda success.
Yeah, there was another one that was. I guess it would have been like in my honorable mentions, but it's not Facenda, but I want to say it is Callis, for the 1971, the year of the team. It has like the, it starts off like these really quick edits where it's like bump, 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 bump. And you hear like these crazy slow motion hits in the intro.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Callis would have done it in 71. That seems a little early.
Yeah. I don't remember who it was. It is a good one, but it doesn't have Facenda, so I didn't include it. But Greg, what's your next one?
Well, the next one I had was I apologize. I'm
all this NFL film stock is getting you fainting.
Yeah. Best ever quarterbacks.
Football began as a runner's game, but it prospered and grew with the discovery of flight. Only one man commands the flight of a football. He is the quarterback. This is a story about the greatest quarterbacks who have ever played in the National Football League. Men who earned fame and glory, each in his own way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, so there's two different versions, right?
I only know the one that I've seen with Terry Bradshaw, and I don't know if I know the one I'm seeing in my head with, obviously, it came out in the 70s. Is there a second one?
Yeah, they updated. Yeah, they updated it. And I think Facenda did the first one, which would have been the best ever series. They did best ever running backs, best ever coaches.
Right.
And then I think in 85, they did – I think it was the only one they updated because of Marino. I think Marino had that great 1984 season, and I think they updated it in 85. And I if I'm correct, yeah, I believe it was a different narrator there.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Well,
Brad Crandall, I think, did some of the ones in 84 and 85. So.
And for me, kind of the impact, and I don't have any, quotes off the top of my head with it, but, being a kid back in the 70s, we, obviously there was no internet. There was, you had two ways of getting your NFL information, either through the TV screen or through the library or books. So back, and I don't, Aaron, I don't know if, you're closer to the grade school era than being in grade school than I am. But back in the 70s, we had Scholastic books that every month would give you a selection. And as a kid, I dove right into the football books, among which was the Great NFL Fun Book. And I think, so when I see, when I watch, the quarterbacks, it's kind of, to me, kind of like the visual companion to all those great Scholastic NFL books that I still have in my library. So, and to me, it's just, again, going back to what I've probably said maybe a little too much. The feeling of being a 12-year-old, being feeling of being a 10-year-old, and just, you know, kind of getting into that hero worship a little bit as a kid, you know, Terry Bradshaw, Bob Greasy, you know, so on and so forth, Roger Staubach. And so to me, and then you add, obviously, you know, with the visuals, you've got Facenda, and really to me, and something like that, there's no other, I don't think even Harry Callis would have, had he done the narration, I don't think he would have had that impact on me that the voice of Facenda does, because it just comes through and it just hooks you. And so that's my take on it.
One, his voice feels dramatic, right? And especially for a game like football, where, you know, you have like these short little pockets of no action, and then, you know, you have like a time that ticks down to where you have to snap the ball and you don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, I think his voice kind of adds to that dramatic effect as well.
And Harry Callis was great, but Facenda just added that something. Right. And, you know, whatever, you know, I don't even want to say it. In astronomy, I guess what we call the dark matter. There's something there that's pulling you in, and it's magical.
Yeah, and there was a few of those, right, that he did, not just the quarterbacks, but he did, like, best ever runners as well. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I think it's best ever runners, best ever coaches.
Yeah.
Best ever teams, and then best ever professionals, I think was the series. I think it was about five of them, I guess. So, that was another tremendous series to sort of get you hooked into, you know, just learning history, learning players and profiles, and Facenda would draw you in.
What was the professionals about?
I think it was more of like guys, pros. I think it was, I definitely know Jim Marshall was in it. It's guys who were like, oh, these are professionals, you know, like, who else was in this show? Maybe Larry Wilson.
Okay.
You know, it was almost like these are kind of pros, you know, guys that had, maybe Jerry Kramer, like, no, he was legendary lineman. I think there was guys who had played a long time and have been, you know, maybe under the radar, you're not quite, you know, the superstars, but, you know, but just sort of pros at that time.
Yeah. I recently saw a couple of days ago, whenever I was compiling my list, that Legends of the Fall was that, I guess it was a proposed series that never took off, but Steve had introduced it, I guess, the pilot episode in one of his specials. And I think he included snippets of like that quarterback show. And I think he named Johnny Unitas the best of all time.
Yeah, it was sort of a precursor to what best ever came, you know, like that was kind of, you know, so, but Legends of the Fall, I would say that was sort of the precursor to the best ever series. So.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I mean, those best ever, and especially with the runners, man. I mean, you just like listen to him talk about Gale Sayers, and it just matches, you know, like that Thunderer's voice, but that graceful running style. All right, as Chris alluded to, my number two is They Call It Pro Football from 1967.
It starts with a whistle and ends with a gun. 60 minutes of close in action from kickoff to touchdown. This is pro football, the sport of our time. The men who play it are the best there are, disciplined professionals who perform on a stage 100 yards long. For the audience crowding the stands, the drama begins with a slap of leather in the song of men in motion. But for 1,500 professional football players, it begins in the relentless heat of midsummer.
15-29. Even.
Improve day by day by day, and all of a sudden you're a lot better. And if you want a job now, you got to work hard.
First, Chris, is this mandatory viewing when you get a job in NFL films?
I mean, You got to be familiar with it, maybe, or at least make an effort to watch it and stuff. So, I mean, like I said, that one's even older than 50 years, and like I said, it's still. Like I said, still holds up. It's still tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, I this is the film I think that really began the NFL film style. I mean, obviously you had Pro Football's Longest Day, where he covered the championship game between the Giants and the Packers. But you know, this has Facenda's voice. you have a lot of sound bites and music cut into it. It has a little bit of like that xylophone feel throughout, but it also has that dramatic music as well. And he takes some time to really explore the entire game through different positions. And even just the opening, you get the feeling like he looks at football as more than just a game. You know, it's a festival to him. Whenever they have like the pageantry of everybody playing the bands and you have the guy with the jetpack on going through, I don't know if that's halftime or if it's pregame, but you just get the sense that this, you know, Steve and everybody at NFL Films is trying to show that this is a tradition and not just like an activity that grown men are playing. He had a couple of good ones when he was talking about the, the players, you know, like for the audience crowding in the stands, the drama begins with a slap of leather and the song of Man in Motion. But for the 1500 professional football players, it begins in the relentless heat of midsummer. I thought that was an interesting way to kind of show what life is like for pro football. And then he has like, you know, when he gets to the defense, the search and destroy taglines.
Yeah.
And then whenever it comes for the defensive back, he says their responsibility, stop the play, guess and gamble, but don't fail. So
it's like Greg mentioned, like it should be required viewing of anybody at NFL Films, but because that's the thing, nobody made a film like that about pro football. Like now, you know, even the last 15, 20 years, like you would see, you know, people trying to write like that or write highlights or produce a documentary like that. But 1967, nobody really even tried that. There was a film that a company made called Mayhem on a Sunday Afternoon. And that, you know, that was done. And you had The Violent World of Sam Hoff that was on CBS with Walter Cronkite, you know. So, but up to 67, like nobody was putting music, you know, to narration, to action, to sound. So that's what makes that one special. So I'm glad, you know, it was on your list or one of our lists, because like I said, that not only did it, you know, not only is a great documentary, like I said, nobody had done really that to that level, you know, of a documentary, especially for pro football in the NFL.
Yeah. And I remember watching this on the Lost Treasures, and the editor, Yoshio Kichi, was that his name? Yeah. Apparently he didn't like football at all. And I don't even know if he got along with anybody else in NFL Films, but it's amazing how this guy, even though he was so disinterested in the topic, would still be able to edit a film like this.
And I think coming for as an outsider, I think that actually made it better, because he, you know, he was able to look at it objectively in terms of, you know, I mean, all of us, we look at things objectively, but as a pure outsider, knowing what to put in and what, you know, it's genius that he came in and did the work he did.
Yeah, yeah, being a filmmaker, like I said, you don't necessarily have to love the topic you're doing. And
right.
Yeah, it'd be nice that you like football, or you love football to produce a football, but it's not a prerequisite, you know, and right. stuff. So. Yeah, like you said, it's a little bit of an outside, but if you can edit, you can produce, and you can cut, you know, edit to music or have a feel of music, you know, you can make a really good, entertaining film.
Well, and like whenever I was watching this, it also kind of gave me the feeling of like watching surf movies. You know, I feel like there's like a really big similarity between like surf movies you watch, and I'm not talking about like the Big Wednesday or stuff like that, like these 40-minute like surfing videos from like the 70s, 80s, and even now, where they just like kind of show the surf techniques underneath the music and how everything just seems to flow together. And all the music that they intertwine, all the edits they put together just seem to flow from beginning to end. And obviously a lot of people thought so, because it went on to win a lot of festivals. But yeah, I mean, as mentioned, it's the original, and it's the one that kind of paved the way for the style that came about. And I'm not even sure when this aired. Was this aired prior to one of the, I guess it would have been the AFL-NFL championship at the time?
No, I think it was like before the next season. I think it was,
okay,
or the beginning of 67.
Gotcha.
If I'm correct, yeah.
You also mentioned Mayhem on a Sunday Afternoon. Isn't that William Friedkin?
No, was it? I thought he did. He did a different one, I think, if I'm correct. I forget who did one. I thought he did one called Grange the Greatness, was the William Friedkin one. The Hollywood director, he did one called Grange the Greatness. That was similar to a recap of what pro football was in NFL. I thought Mayhem in the Sunday, I forget now, or it's slipping my mind who.
I think William did the Mayhem on a Sunday Afternoon.
Okay.
Because he was, I think he was working in Chicago actually as like a news director, and then he did some documentaries before he became, you know, the French Connection.
Yeah, and, well, in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Grange the Greatness. Okay. That's the one that's coming to mind for me. I thought Mayhem was a different. It's a guy who did some documentaries, sports documentaries too. But the name's slipping my mind right now.
Yeah, I've been trying to find a copy of Friedkin's documentary because French Connection is one of my favorite movies. Mm. So I've been curious to see what it would be like for him to put together a football documentary. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it, Greg?
No. Nope.
On everyone's
I haven't even seen the French Connection, to be honest with you. I'm like, I'm really? Sitting there hearing you guys talking. I'm like, you know what? I got to add that to my playlist on Amazon Prime.
No, that's one of my favorites. Did you see To Live and Die in L.A.?
No. No.
All right. Well, you're just behind then.
Yeah. Well, then, in all fairness, you did not see Gus until I recommended it.
I think no one's going to hold it against me if I didn't see Gus until someone twisted my arm to do it. All right. Well, we're coming off on the top. Chris, what takes the prize for you?
Well, I think I've went out of order, so I'm like all over the place.
What's the last one then?
So the last one was, it's more because you mentioned Facenda lines, and it was like one of my favorite lines. Like I said, I wouldn't say it's particularly one of my top five all time, but it's just the George Allen line, you know, him talking about George Allen, you know, to start off like, he doesn't swear, smoke, drink, or spit. His favorite beverage is milk. His favorite movie is The Sound of Music, and his middle name is Herbert. George Allen is so square, says one rival coach, that you could roll him on a Las Vegas craps table. Yet George Allen is a man for his time and certainly a man for his place. So, you know, it's not particularly a show, but when you said, hey, you know, pick your five favorite for scent, like that's just every time I hear it, it just makes me laugh. And just like, you know what? It's just the way he presents, like I said, because he can do it all. Like he makes me laugh. He makes me cry. You know, he makes me get pumped up and excited about football. Like just hearing him talk about George Allen and his, funny quirks, you know, like I said, he's just a genius.
He doesn't swear, smoke, drink, or spit. His favorite beverage is milk. His favorite movie is The Sound of Music. And his middle name is Herbert. George Allen is so square, says a rival coach, that you could roll him on a Las Vegas craps table. Yet George Allen is a man for his time and certainly a man for his place. In 1972, his team won 11 games, more than any Redskin team in history. They finished in first place in the Eastern Division and earned the right to meet the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs. Allen assembled a group of strangers and taught them the meaning of togetherness. He brought in the disillusioned and the disaffected, the abandoned and the aged. He made them all winners and made football fun again.
Yeah, it's got to be a good combination hearing a guy with serious like Facenda narrate a guy who's serious also in Allen, but also very quirky, you know? Greg, what's left on your list?
And what's left on my list is, you know, I think one of the greatest NFL films productions most people don't even know about, and that's Wake Up the Echoes, about the history of Notre Dame.
Time in its passage changes all things. One place, however, has sustained a spirit and a tradition for so long that its story has evolved into legend. Each autumn in South Bend, Indiana, the glory of yesteryear meets the challenge of today. The tradition of the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame began nearly 100 years ago. The tradition is winning. Something Notre Dame has learned to do
better than any other college football team.
And, yeah, that's an interesting one. How did that come about?
I mean, it's out there. And first, I want to preface this with, I am not a Notre Dame fan. However, I've been to South Bend, and I've seen Notre Dame and Navy play twice. And I got to say, it is a magical place. And so, before the first time I went to Notre Dame to see Navy almost beat Notre Dame, I watched this film, and it's one of those John Facenda lines that, you know, we all know the classics, obviously. But this one, and he says in it, he goes, and again, it was written by Steve Sable, beneath the giant birch tree where Father Soren once sat smoking a peace pipe with the Indians, rest the bones of Newt Rockne. His spirit has yet to be buried. And you couple it with the visuals of South Bend in the autumn, and South Bend is a beautiful campus, and I've been there in October. Beautiful. And it just gives you chills. And another one of those, good almost hour-long documentaries where it's a football lesson. It is a history lesson, and he narrates throughout and leaves, you know, in this one, he doesn't talk throughout at all. He lets the story tell. The interviews kind of tell the tale and guides the viewer kind of along the journey. And by the time you get to the end of it, and I think it ends with, I think with the national champion, it's about 77, I think. You almost want to become a Notre Dame fan.
Yeah, that line makes it sound like folktale, right? Like, yeah. He's a guy that should have been writing poetry back in the late 1800s. You know, just coming up with lines like that just kind of really romanticizes anything he puts his mind to.
Yeah, yeah. And, Notre Dame, most people who follow college football now only know of the legends of Notre Dame. But back then, back in the 70s, 60s, Notre Dame was truly the big time when it comes to college football. And I know, Chris, you being from Ohio, I know Ohio's people at Ohio State might say differently. But just as a general, Notre Dame, for many people, they've always considered Notre Dame kind of America's college football team up, way back when. And with Facenda doing the documentary and with his narration, it only adds, I think, to the mystique and kind of the legend, especially back in the 20th century with Notre Dame.
Well, and something that's interesting about that period, too, is and this is something that that Upton Bell talked about in his book, back then you could really only, if you didn't see it live, you only had the radio to kind of create that image of it in your head. I feel like having Facenda narrate a guy who was, about Newt Rockne from that time period kind of adds that own mythology of what it would be like to have that bigger than life figure that as a child you would have to paint in your head.
Some quarterbacks occupy a field, a few rule it. Some quarterbacks hold the crowd, a few possess it. Some quarterbacks light up a team, a few ignite the play. These combustible few blaze with the X factors of generalship, intensity, intelligence, authority. There is a royalty apart from the position. When these men take the field, their fellow players are as attentive as the fans. Few quarterbacks are of this royal breed. They are the young, the old, and the bold. This is their story, the story of a pro quarterback.
Well, the last one on my list, and personally it's my favorite, is The Young, the Old, and the Bold from 1969, also written and directed by Bob Ryan. And this one for me is cool because everybody from that time period talks about how much movie geeks they were. And obviously this is a direct reference to, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I think it's cool that, they would kind of connect that film in there and use it as influence. But this is to me the best piece that mythologizes the most important position in the game. You know, it shows how great quarterbacks have a lot of different styles to their disposal. You know, Daryl LaMonica uses the bomb. Unitas is more surgical in his passing game. And you have Fran Tarkenton that just runs around. And there's also a good clip of Fran Tarkenton when he's running around. He tosses the ball to his running back. And the running back looks like he's about to take off. And he sees a receiver down the field and he launches one for a touchdown. That, I don't know if that was a flag or not, but it should have been. But it was still a cool play to see. And it also is interesting in how it analyzes and explores other positions and also other parts of the game through the quarterback's eyes. You know, Facenda has a line that says quarterbacks soon learn the harsh reality that running is for others. And it just shows a bunch of them limping off the field or just lying on the ground. And there was a lot of love for John Brody in this one too, and Roman Gabriel. And they have like this interesting part when they go talk about the defense where they have, defenders hitting or sacking the quarterback, and they intercut like graphics of bombs exploding, which was an interesting take. But yeah, he says, you know, the when he talks about the quarterbacks, they are the calves in football's rodeo. Generalship is courage as much as it is splitting defenses. And the transition from young to old to bold comes fast. It's living a lifetime in a few short years. And that pretty much sums up, I think, certainly for a quarterback, but for a lot of people who play professional football too.
Yep. It's, you know, not my top five, but it's probably in my top 10.
Yeah, I can see
if
that.
This list was hard for me to put together. Cause it's like, man, there's so much good out there that it's, you know, we could have done a top 10 or even done a top five and turned it into the top 15.
And like, this was mostly all shows. Like we didn't even get into any team highlights.
Right.
Any weekly stuff. I mean, he did the first, you know, what is it, 18, 17, Super Bowl one, like not one Super Bowl reference. Like if you watch those Super Bowl highlights, you know, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 really good lines, really good, you know, the Super Bowl highlights. You know, ESPN shows them, you know, all 55 now, like, you know, so he did them all, like, so we didn't even reference anything like that.
Yeah. Chris, it's funny because on our DVR here at the house, my wife has been constantly after me. I'm taking up serious drive space with Super Bowls 1 through 18. And my wife's like, why are you stopping there? I go, well, because 18 was the last Super Bowl highlight to me that really mattered, because it's all John Facenda, except I think maybe for Super Bowl 2 was not John Facenda. So they're still on the hard drive. And she's like, are you going to watch those? I go, yeah, in time. Because it's just like, I need to be right in the mood and sitting there. And, but yeah, like you said, I mean, they're like, he did Cincinnati Bengals highlights when the Bengals were horrible. And it's still, it's poetry to the ear. It's like, oh, again, it's like what Steve Sable said. He could read the phone book and it would be, you know, you'd be mesmerized. He can make it sound, the phone book sound interesting.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, you had to kind of put an asterisk because, I mean, he's done hundreds upon hundreds of these productions. And yeah it's like there are a lot of like season highlights that I haven't yet to see. But it's just incredible, like how Steve was able to, number one, write all of these for him and how he was able to just consistently put out the same sort of baritone energy that he had for all the productions.
Right. And, you know, and it goes to, and I was thinking as we're talking, you know, there's a lot of good stuff with John Facenda out there that, Chris, remember when NFL Films put out The Power and the Glory, the CD?
Yep.
I have 3 CDs I got off Amazon because I wanted to make sure. I'm big on having backups of stuff. Well, in this case, I wanted to have a backup to the backup to the, in case, because that whole album, there was a commercial they did when it came out, and it was some guys, you know, had the back then you had the Discman, you didn't have iPods, or it was after the Walkman, but he, you know, he's mowing the lawn and he's listening to John Facenda as he's mowing the lawn, and it's like, it's still, I mean, if you go on Amazon, you can find it, much like, you know, Chris's great books on Amazon. But that's one of those, if you can find the CD, grab it.
Have you ever seen the clip of him narrating indoor box lacrosse?
No.
Yeah, there's I don't know how it came about, but I don't know if it had, I don't know if it was through NFL Films or if it was just like another production company in Philadelphia, but he does like a narration for box lacrosse in the 70s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think actually on Tim Hanlon's show, Good Seats Still Available, yeah. he did some episode with people who were, I don't know if they were players or former executives or what, for an indoor lacrosse league, and he starts the show off by playing that clip.
Huh. Wow, yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, I saw him do that. I also saw him do one where he narrates soccer too.
Oh, so, wow.
Man of all seasons.
Well, you know, it's funny because, I mean, you know, talking about that era of announcers, I mean, in Chicago, you know, in Philadelphia, you had John Facenda with NFL Films. So, you know, for me, Facenda is part of that soundtrack of my youth.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to look back, and Chris, you, and I know if we had to compare lists, say, who were the people you grew up with listening to, it obviously would be different because we're in different markets and everything. But like for me here in Chicago, I had the benefit of having, you know, Jack Brickhouse, Harry Carey, Wayne Larrabee. But the constant through all of it would be Facenda, I think, for every one of us growing up, including, you know, even to a certain extent, Howard Cosell. But of all those voices, and NFL Films did a great top 10 of the top 10 voices of football. And the best part of that is, well, there can only be number one.
Was he number one?
Was Facenda.
Okay.
You know, and everybody else is a far distant second and third and fourth and so on.
See, there was one time NFL Network did like a top 10 of, I think, best mic'd up people in NFL history. Matt Stafford was number one.
Yeah, you know, I don't like, get that. I didn't get that.
I think that was just a choice to appeal to the younger crowd because I think Hank Stram was number two. And if this was made, you know, 10 years ago, Hank Stram would have been number one. I think one guy like walked off the set whenever he found out. Yeah. But now, Chris, did you work extensively with Steve Sable whenever he was alive?
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that sort of always, you know, appealed to me working for him was like his door was always open and he was always there. He would take like one vacation a year right before training camp, you know, where it was the dead period, because he loved making, you know, football movies. So his door was always open. You know, he would always stop by the library and say, hey, you know, what are you working on, Chris? Or do you need anything to make your job better? You know, and you could always talk to him, you know, about anything, especially, you know, football and movies and things like that. So, yeah, he was a special guy. You know, it's like, I was fortunate. I think I was able to work for him for 16 years. And you know, like I said, he was just special to work for. And, you know, so down to earth, like I said, he would do anything to make your job better, you know, and to give you all the tools and, you know, whether it's my, or like that, or the producers or cameraman or music edit, you know, whatever, he always looked out for everybody, you know? So that's what made him, like I said, very special to work for.
Did he ever have any like unrealized projects that he wanted to do that never got, you know, never got rolling or never got picked up off the ground?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I might not have been able to talk to him that deep to see. Mm-hmm. I know some of the last things that he enjoyed, like Hard Knocks was something that, you know, that grew into something that, you know, nobody saw. You know, it was like, you know, it's been 20 plus years, and, you know, that's the first sports reality TV show, and now 20 years later. So he's big on that. He was really big in pushing, top 100 greatest, and especially America's Game. That was something he really wanted to do, was America's Game. And we do it every year now. Like I said, every Super Bowl champion gets that, you know, but 2004, that was just, you know, that was his baby. He was like, look, we're going to do every Super Bowl champion. We're only going to interview three guys. It's going to be their stories. So he was excited about that. So there were certain things like that. So I'm not sure if there was something that, this is really what I want to do. You know, it's unfortunate he was not around for the NFL 100 season, you know, and that would have been very special, I think, for him. But I know those last projects, you know, because, you know, we would always push it, you know, like Hard Knocks, you know, America's Game, Football Life was something that he was like. So there were shows that we had not done or things that we have not done that he would have been excited. So those were the things that he gravitated towards, like, hey, what can we do different? What are we doing different? That, you know, what's the next big show? So And that's something we still do today, just pushing the envelope and say, hey, what's going to be the next, you know, big project or maybe the next big show. And like I said, Hard Knocks has grown into in-season Hard Knocks. You know, like I said, we did the Colts this year. First time anybody's ever done that, you know, weekly show. But, you know, so things like that, you know, he was always sort of pushing us, you know, pushing the producers, pushing, you know, pushing people in the building to try to think of those type of projects.
And you and can that see was it. Yeah. And you can see his Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. I didn't mean
to. No, I was just going to say that was there till you know, the day he passed. Keep pushing the envelope.
Well, and I see his influence even still in terms of, you know, I just finished up watching the six-part Joe Montana series on Peacock, and I'm sitting there going and I'm watching the credits waiting for your name to show. See your name, and there it was. Actually, I even paused it to even show my wife. Just, hey, there's Chris's name. And but that was so well put together. And even though, you know, it's been, I mean, how many years are we going on since he passed away now? Are we past 10 yet?
Not I think quite.
We're getting
I
close.
Think 12. I think right. Maybe this October or this, yeah.
But it's very, I mean, in many ways, when I'm watching that, it was done in such a beautiful way. I could see Steve Sable's influence, but I could also in my head even kind of hear some of John Facenda's narrations, you know, back during that time period. Just as, you know, I'm sitting there watching it, and it's great, but man, if John, it would have been awesome to have John Facenda narrate that whole documentary if it were possible, because if you've not seen it, it's definitely worth the 6 hours spent on Peacock to see it.
Yeah, that's definitely on my list. And Chris, you also had something to do with the NFL in the 50s special that HBO did a while back.
Yeah, that one was really fun because I always say about myself, I live in the Stone Age because I love the 20s and 30s. And that's a lot of my writing projects and all my side stuff, you know, like, but the 50s are actually close. I just have never really tackled the 50s in a way, especially with writing. So that project for HBO was really fun. I'll tell you a little story. The only negative was they wanted it to be like, they had a baseball version called, I think, The Game It Was.
Yeah.
They did a baseball series where they had all that home movies. Well, we didn't find as much home movies as they had for baseball. You know, so because they wanted it to be maybe a series, like two or three episodes. Right. But we just couldn't find that color home, you know, like baseball. That baseball collection was just so huge, you know, and they could do The Game It Was or something. There was like three or
when
four
When it was
parts.
A game. I have.
When it was a game, yeah.
Yeah, when it was a game, so, I got, yeah.
Yeah, so doing the research for that, you know, we spent like, you know, 9 months doing research. You know, they gave us plenty of time to do it. And it was really fun to do just because we did find some stuff. We just didn't find that huge amount of stuff, you know, because if you watch it, there's some home movies or some color stuff that had never been seen before. Right. And the interviews I thought were shot great. I mean, they were done very well. We were able to do some guys, you know, like Raymond Barry, Lenny Moore, Hop Cassidy, you know, Frank, like guys who we've done before, guys we didn't do before. Like we even did Jane Russell, you know, who's Bob Waterfield's wife. You know, here's a Hollywood icon that we're able to, you know, so it was such a really unique project to be a part of and to go through. And like I said, yeah, that's one of my favorites. I wrote down a few of my favorites that I had worked on over the years. And that one and the Johnny Unitas one for HBO that was done in 1999. Those are two of my favorites because Unitas, like I said, you know, so I do really enjoy the 50s and I just haven't tackled it like I've done the 20s and 30s as much. But that, yeah, the game of their lives, I think it was called pro football in the 1950s. That was very fun to be a part of. And I'm, like I said, to be able to show that to the public.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Unitas one. I mean, I remember whenever I watched it was probably, I guess, a year ago where I watched The Game of Their Lives, and I thought it was great because you don't really see like that era talked about enough outside of the 1958 championship game. Because I've seen also some other, it was a show that Kurt Gowdy hosted, The Way It Was.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen that? And they would
have like three or four guys from the event, and they would interview. That used to be on ESPN Classics a lot. You know, they don't show it as much.
Yeah, he had like Otto Graham on talking about like the 19 I don't know, 48 chamber or whatever year it was. But yeah, those are like interesting programs that ESPN Classics used to have a lot before it became like just a runoff for ESPN 1 and 2 before they ultimately just killed it. I'm also surprised too that the Sables never really did feature films. You know, I always wish I could have seen like what it would be like to see them do a real Hollywood movie centered around football.
Yeah, that's I think that's been thought about, but I don't think it gets past much of, oh, maybe we should, you know. Now, some of our cinematographers have been used for Hollywood movies, you know, and football movies, but not the idea and the, you know, right. the beginning, the middle, and the end, you know, coming up with the idea, maybe writing a script and then, you know, shooting it and producing it. We've never got to that level. So,
yeah. Well, go ahead. You know, talking about that, I know in terms of, you know, the NFL films, I know was involved with, you know, the scenes in Paper Lion and also, was it Number One with Charlton Heston? I believe.
It's my favorite of all time. I swear to God.
It is. You and I definitely, you know what? It's one of those things. It's like Paper Lion is my favorite and Number One's your favorite.
Well, the thing about people, I think, hated Number One back when it came out because they're like, he's not a pro quarterback. But like, right. When you look at someone like LaMonica or like George Blanda, like, you know, that side by side comparison you see of Tom Brady now versus George Blanda at like 35, 36. Like, I feel like that movie ages better seeing like how athletes now are so super great. And right. When you put it in the context of like 1960s, you could see Charlton Heston being somewhat of a pro quarterback. But yeah, I really just like the way they went about that movie because like they have like flashbacks, mini flashbacks in the story structure, and then you have like that crazy editing sequence in the opening game.
Yeah.
And then the ending too is kind of weird, but yeah, I think it's a cool movie. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, this was a lot of fun. Hopefully everyone has either seen these movies or will have a chance. And for any of you who are interested, I'll put together a playlist that you can watch these films. Guys, thank you both for joining me. Hope you guys had as much fun as I did talking about John Facenda, aka the voice of God, and long live NFL films.
Definitely.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Of course. Take care, guys.